In the beginning was the Word. Man, I love the Gospel of John. As we work through the Bible, one book at a time here, the Gospel of John. Hard to fit this one into one podcast. But what I want to offer, just as kind of an intro, is that John's Gospel is beautifully written. It's intellectually seductive. It's just an ocean of theology. But it's also an invitation to know Jesus as a friend. And I invite you, as you listen and you ever just read the Gospel of John, to hear Jesus speaking to you as one who comes to you in vulnerability, yet care, but also finally that he is the Lord and Savior. So without further ado, let's get pondered.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
The devil had already decided that Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, would betray Jesus. And during supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, got up from supper, took off his outer robe, and tied a towel around himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel that was tied around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered, "You do not know now what I am doing, but later you will understand." Peter said to him, "You will never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "One who has bathed does not need to wash except for the feet, but is entirely clean, and you are clean, though not all of you." For he knew who was to betray him. For this reason he said, "Not all of you are clean." After he had washed their feet and put on his robe and had reclined again, he said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have set you an example, that you also should do as I have done to you. Very truly I tell you, slaves are not greater than their master, nor are messengers greater than the one who sent them. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them."
Now that you've read the four Gospels, I'm curious, what word comes to mind when I say the Gospel of Matthew or Mark or Luke or John? What becomes the one word or maybe image that you associate with it? For me, when I think about the Gospel of Matthew, I probably think of disciple. And I say disciple because I think that the Gospel of Matthew, it feels a little bit like a handbook almost, a handbook of what it means to be a part of the Lord's brigade or Lord's kind of outfit, team, if not even kind of army. Again, I struggle with that word in this context, but this sense that there are rules, there's discipline, there's even consequences. Again, the Gospel of Matthew reads like a manual in many ways on what does it mean to be kind of a soldier, to be a student, to be a disciple. There's some rigor there, right? Gospel of Mark, though, reads different. There's a different kind of vibe there. And the word that comes to my mind when I think of the Gospel of Mark is adventure, but kind of like a scary adventure. Like I think of like the outback hike that is a little bit kind of off the beaten path. I think about spiritual warfare. I think about being pushed, that there's something exciting yet costly about following Jesus. There's a sense again that we're engaged in the battle against the various forces in the cosmos that are set against us. Yet Jesus is supremely powerful, and that if we can stay with him, that all things will be okay. So I have just a almost like a Lord of the Rings kind of feel there, like we're on this journey together with Gandalf or something. And then when I think about Luke's gospel, I really think about generosity, about miracles, just this kind of, this really a warm sense that we're kind of called to be part of a community of grace, a community that expects God's love and kindness and mercy to break forth, to kind of crack the hearts open of those who have hardened their hearts, to challenge and to open the hearts of the rich to be generous, for people to share what they have with one another, pushing back towards community. So I might say like a community of grace or even compassion kind of starts to be what emerges in Luke's gospel here. Yeah, maybe compassion might even be the word there, that to be a follower of Jesus at some point, yeah, involves that giving, that caring for others. But when I think about the gospel of John, though, I think about the word friend, the word relationship, because Jesus is again and again in the gospel of John interacting with people in a really deep and beautiful way. Now, Jesus interacts with people in all the Gospels, but the Gospel of John, you could almost argue, is just kind of one interaction with after another, not against the forces of the evil like in Mark's Gospel, not kind of moving from parable to parable like Luke, or not moving from kind of lesson to lesson like the schoolteacher Matthew, but just these interactions. So, for instance, like when Jesus is calling his disciples, there's like a real conversation. It's not just like he says, follow me, and they do it, but Jesus invites them to come and see, and then Nathaniel, and then Philip, and there's this discussion about Jesus, and they talk to Jesus, and right away, Jesus knows what's in Nathaniel's heart. And Nathaniel's taken aback by this, and Nathaniel kind of follows Jesus, but this just shows what's going to happen again and again, where in John's gospel, Jesus interacts with somebody. He makes statements, but often asks questions that just show that Jesus knows where this conversation was going to end up and got there before we got there. Yet at the same time, Jesus isn't haughty or aloof. He's vulnerable at the same time. So it's this really kind of captivating kind of Jesus who just kind of invites you into relationship because he's vulnerable, he's real, he's authentic. Yet he's powerful. He's Lord. And you see this in Nicodemus, this, you know, Pharisee, powerful, who comes by night, and Jesus kind of really theologically schools him, but kind of gets at what he's hungry for. And then the next chapter, Jesus in chapter 4, he's meeting the woman at the well. She's a foreigner, a Samaritan. Yet Jesus once again shows with his questions that he knows her better than she even knows herself. And he's vulnerable, though. He says, can I have something to drink? He's willing to cross those boundaries with her. And then later on, you could be, again, you could stop anywhere in the Gospel of John, but you could stop in chapter 11 where he meets with Mary and Martha after the death of their brother Lazarus, and he shows vulnerability. He acknowledges, he cries with them, and he's still Lord, and he still knows what's kind of on their hearts and what they really need. The chapter we just heard here where Jesus washes his disciples' feet, these interactions, these comments with Peter about what's going to happen, how this plays itself out. Go even further ahead, and we're at the cross, and Jesus there is with, not just talking to the crowd, but he's talking to the disciples, and talking to the one whom he loves, and says, this is your mother, and to his mother, behold your son. Then in the resurrection, there's this long interaction with Mary Magdalene, and then the gospel concludes with just dramatic interaction between Jesus and Peter, where he asked Peter those questions, "Do you love me?" Throughout the gospel, Jesus is interacting with people in really powerful stories. Stories that on the one hand show him to be Lord, in control, kind of greater than, knowing where our thoughts are, knowing where the conversation is going to go, asking such deep, amazing questions, yet at the same time, being vulnerable. I'm curious, in your life, who is it that is able to kind of bring together being vulnerable with you as well as asking those deep questions that show that they understand you? My sense is that that's very few people in our lives who can both be vulnerable with us, yet also ask us questions that show us kind of what we needed to be thinking and just kind of cause us to go to that deep, that really kind of place of our soul. And that's the person that we meet in Jesus. And the Gospel of John, though, isn't simply written to tell you that Jesus was friends with people many, many years ago. The Gospel of John is written so that you and I today could have that relationship with Jesus. The Gospel of John is an extended invitation to ourselves have that kind of relationship with Jesus, not one where we simply kind of learn what he's saying, like in the Gospel of Matthew, and not just simply kind of get in the back of the Subaru or wherever, or the Jeep or the old church van, and kind of go off and venturing. Not even just like sitting around the campfire telling stories, like you might imagine in Luke's gospel. But just that one-on-one, that real intense, kind of intimate conversation. And Jesus invites us through the Gospel of John into that relationship with him. Should be clear why evangelicals, those who emphasize a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, love the Gospel of John. And I think there's something in the Gospel of John for all of us. Again, there's just this invitation to a relationship with Jesus, one that is like a friend where we share, and yet we are shared with by Jesus. And this other person who is Jesus finally knows us and understands us and is willing, ultimately then, and this is the peak of John's gospel, to lay down his life for us. Do you ever walk by a piece of artwork in a museum and you say to yourself, "That's a beautiful painting. And wow, the skill of the artist, they really, depicted that." Or you might say, "Wow, I definitely have a feeling of sadness when I look at that artwork." And maybe get a little bit more sophisticated. And you say, "Wow, the way in which the colors on the one end of the painting are, more blue, and over here they're more red, and the artist seems to be doing something with kind of movement there," or you think about shapes and the way that they kind of maybe lead the eye. Like, you kind of do your own little dabbling of, like, art analysis. And then you have somebody come by who's like a real, like a docent or an art expert, and they just start pointing out to you the structure of the painting and the way in which, the eye naturally moves. And that they point out to you the use of color or certain techniques that this artist did that people hadn't ever done before, hadn't done in centuries. And then they tie it into sort of social, political movements at the time and the broader flow of art history. And then they get you with just these subtle little details that you wouldn't have seen otherwise, that just expose the genius of the artist or the way that this piece of art relates to some other piece of artwork. And you're like, "Oh, wow, I had no idea," right? And then you're like, "Whoa, this piece of art is way more intricate and beautiful and complex." I want to say that all scripture is a little bit like that, where the more you look at it, the more it becomes like an amazing piece of art. But the Gospel of John is just so compelling because you can just look at it as like, "Oh, wow," like you can read any of the stories and like there's just like an intuitive emotional level. Like you can get it when you read the story of Jesus with his disciples and he says, "I've got to wash your feet." And you can just imagine yourself in the room and just the sheer discomfort with having Jesus wash, you know, one of the dirtiest parts of the body and doing the servant's task, right? You get it, right? And you're drawn in, and you don't have to be a theologian. You don't have to be very sort of sophisticated biblically to say, okay, this guy Jesus is serious. He's real about helping others, and he's calling us as his disciples to be humble, right? You don't have to be a genius to figure that out. But there's something so rich and beautiful the more you start to look at it. So what happens here is that in John's gospel, this is the Last Supper, right? Judas goes and, you know, betrays Jesus. But there's something really missing from John's gospel at this point. What's missing is the bread and the wine of Holy Communion. Where is Holy Communion in John's gospel? It's great that we get this story about friendship, about loving one another, about serving one another, but where is the bread and wine? Where is the new covenant? Where is the Passover? Well, it turns out that John's gospel does it in a different way. And it's something that if you weren't paying attention, you probably didn't catch. So there's a story back in John chapter 6. And on the one level, it's an emotionally resonant story that shows Jesus interacting with his disciples. The people are hungry, and they're like, Jesus, like, what are we going to do about this? And Jesus kind of looks at them and says, well, you know, kind of, what do you mean? What are we going to do about this? Jesus is like, what are you going to do about it, right? And everybody's confused. A little boy comes forward and says that, you know, he's got something, and this begins a miracle. Again, there's a story about a disciple who kind of feels pushed upon or kind of overwhelmed by the struggles of the world, and he wants to give up, and Jesus says, no, feed these people. There's another story about a little boy here who's willing to give what he has to the cause, and Jesus blesses it and you know, multiplies it and has it, you know, bless so many other people. So, like, you know, there's a million kind of devotions and stories in this about, you know, God's capacity to multiply, about God's capacity to fill us when we feel pushed to the brim, right? So you can go on a very emotionally relational level with John chapter 6. But John chapter 6 is actually Jesus reorienting and putting the Passover story in light of himself. Again, like I said, all of John's gospel, well, is relationship stories, like one relationship after another. It turns out that actually the structure of John's gospel is Jesus reorienting all of these different Jewish holidays around him. And I read the Gospel of John for years before I even had that sense. In fact, John's gospel was assumed to have been written for a Hellenistic audience, like 150 years after Jesus lived, because the philosophical appeals were so complex. My point here is to say that John's gospel, again, has many layers. And the first one is that relational, intuitive level, but then you start digging down, and there's all sorts of other stuff that's happening that, again, you probably didn't see the first time. Don't worry about it. So what's the Passover story? The Passover story is the story of people fleeing Pharaoh, and they cross the river, or the Red Sea, and then they're in the wilderness. In the wilderness, they get hungry, and they clamor for manna, or they clamor for food, and God provides manna for them, this thin, flaky substance, this bread for them. Okay, well, what happens here in John chapter 6? Well, Jesus crosses the boat, in a boat across the lake. Then he gets out and there's a wilderness. And the people are hungry. And he provides them bread. That's basically the Passover story. But then, in case you say, that seems like a little bit of a stretch, Then Jesus goes on a long dialogue about Moses and about Moses and manna in the wilderness. So Jesus is clearly tying it back to the Passover story. Okay, well, what's that got to do with communion? Well, it turns out that Jesus, when he takes the bread, he took the bread, he then gave thanks and gave it, right? Take, give thanks, and then he distributed it. And that word for give thanks there is actually the word Eucharist. In Greek, the word to give thanks is Eucharist. So maybe you've heard of communion in terms of Eucharist. So the first kind of Eucharist of Jesus is done here as he's kind of reliving within the Passover story. And then there's this kind of proclamation by Jesus that you have to eat the bread, which is him, in order to live. So now Jesus starts saying this bread that he's talking about, well, it's actually not just physical, it's not just grain anymore, it's actually him, that he is the bread of life, and that you have to eat of him. So Jesus, on the one level, is just talking about feeding the hungry, and now suddenly, in light of feeding people in the wilderness after they've, you know, crossed the sea, he's suddenly talking to them about how they have to eat the true bread from heaven. And then in the end of all this, when they're sort of collecting, it turns out that there are 12, Jesus says, you know, get all the fragments. And the fragments, there are suddenly 12 baskets in the end, one for each tribe of Israel. And that Jesus' job is to bring about sort of the great sheep who will bring back together the tribes into one. So you start to see here that there's something powerfully kind of a remixing, if you will, to use that sort of 21st century verb, like a remixing on the story of the Passover, not exactly retelling it, but remixing it, and then weaving over this layer of Holy Communion language. So does the Gospel of John ever come out and say, Jesus, on the night in which he was betrayed, took bread, broke it, and gave thanks? No. Does the Gospel of John point towards the way in which Jesus is the new Passover for us, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world, that he is the one who provides us true bread from heaven, which we must eat in order to live? Yes. So again, the Gospel of John has the one level that is emotionally intuitive, and then this other level, which is just rich with symbolism, connections to Judaism. I didn't go as much into philosophy. I could have. You can listen to the other podcast from a year ago, kind of on John 1 there. But I hope as you've reflected on the Gospel of John, then that you can hear this call by Jesus to know him and to befriend him. And if you're not ready for that, to at least be so curious that your mind can't help but just want to read and know more of what this story is all about.